I thank the God of heaven for blessing me to be alive and to be able to be with people whom I love and appreciate for everything that you have ever done for our God and Father in heaven. And thank you for all of the prayers that you prayed in my behalf to God that I could be able to overcome the tragedy that occurred a few years ago. And what I'm going to do is, of course, teach the lesson, but I'm going to give a brief survey, a brief synopsis of what happened October 23rd, and I'm told it was about 10:30 a.m. My son has a mowing company that contracts out with Indianapolis. He does what is called roadside and medians and some of the brush in the county and in the city. And I helped Moses in order to get things rolling, to get them going. So I would ride a mower, but I was mainly a weed eater. And I used what was called a steel weed eater. And I mean, they walk the dog. So I was on a mower cutting a median in Indianapolis, and there was a van that came off the street. And I don't remember this, but I'm going by what I'm told and what a video indicates. It was an 18-wheeler that was following traffic. So the van came off the street onto the median and hit me and put me in the air, looked like a crow. Hit in the air and landed in the middle of the street. And as a result of that, there were a lot of things that happened that I do not recall. My right lung collapsed. The right side of the body has some nerves that are gone. They're dead. They call them permanent injuries. So there was a severe nerve damage on the right side, and the right lung collapsed. The aorta of the heart was damaged. They tell me that I had 7 ribs on the right side that were cracked or broken, and 3 on the left side. There was also what they call TBI, traumatic brain injury. And there was bleeding, because I saw videos of it, there was bleeding in the center of the brain, and then between the brain and the skull, there was an area that also had bleeding that took place. And there was a lot of physical damage that was done. The first hospital that the ambulance, when it got there, took me to was called Eskenazi. It's a major trauma hospital, I guess, in that part of the country, but especially in Indianapolis. And that I was there, they put me into, from what I'm told, a medically induced coma for about a month. And then I left that hospital and they took me to a second hospital called Kindred. And that's where the rehabilitation started. They had to teach me to walk again and to talk again. And then I went to a third hospital, which was wrapping up some of the processes that occurred to try to get me into another circumstance with a stronger body movements and things of that nature. And I don't remember anything about Eskenazi because I was in the coma and it was gone. The second hospital, I remember that probably 3 or 4 days after entering into it, I've started to come into from all the pain meds that had been given me and other medication. And I remember looking in the mirror and I'm told that they had between 13 and 14 IVs in my body in Eskenazi. So when I got into the second hospital, when I started to come to, I'm looking in a mirror and they were pushing me around in wheelchairs. So I'm going up to a mirror and I see all of these tubes in my nose and so forth. And I'm looking and the first thing that I remember is I ask, what am I doing here? Is this me? And so forth. And I've never seen myself or visualized that I would ever be in that kind of a circumstance. So there was a nurse pushing me and I I'm asking, what happened? And so the little piece by piece process started. They wouldn't give me all the details. So every morning, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, the doctors and their nurses would come into the room in the second hospital, and they would ask me, what is your name? When were you born, and where are you? And at the time, I did not know why they were doing that, but now I know it was because of a traumatic brain injury. They wanted to be sure that I was still aware of reality. So I would tell them my name, date of birth, and where I am. And one night, and I would lie in bed on my back. I still do it now because, and I forgot to mention, the spine was injured drastically because there was I think they said 2 or 3 vertebrae that were just blown out of the spine. So the doctor and his nurse, the RN, came in, and I decided the night before that I'm going to make them laugh a little the next time they come in. So they walked in and they said, who are you, when were you born, and where are you? And when they asked me who, I said, Donald Trump. And when I did that, the doctor went, and the nurse, you know, was scratching her head like, what do we do? And they said, who are you, when were you born, and where? And I said, Donald J. Trump. And when I said that, it was like, better call to get a strap brought in here. And I stopped and I told them, I said, no, that was for humor's sake. And I said, Ron Daley, blah, blah, blah. And the doctor went, whew. And then all of the doctors that would come to see me to diagnose and to give me their medical opinions, they told me, they said, we gave up on you. We did not think that you were going to make it. And that's what all of the doctors told me. And they said, we finally came to the point of stating, if he does happen to make it, he'll be a vegetable. And when I heard that, I said, well, I eat a lot of watermelon, so are you saying I'm going to turn into a watermelon? And they got a big kick out of that. They got the point, because I've always loved good humor. Build bridges, tear down walls. We're all human beings. We can get along. We have to. So the doctors would come in, and every single day, I'd be in the bed, and they would go, Ronnie, we gave up on you. Why? How did you stay alive? And I couldn't talk. It was a long time before I could talk. It was more of a very, very faint whisper, because I have about a 3-inch mark in my neck down where they put, there's a special machine. Anyway, they put the tubes in to enable me to breathe and so forth. And when the doctor came in, and he said, how? What are you doing alive? We gave up. Because they asked Thelma, my wife, they asked her, is he an organ donor? And this was like 2 or 3 days after I was in that first hospital. Is he an organ donor? And she said, no. And she specifically said, after the nurse asked 2 or 3 times, please don't ask me that again. He's not going to give up any organs. So when the doctors asked me, how did you make it? What are you doing alive? I couldn't talk, so I pointed up. And this was a doctor from India. And he looked and he said, God. I said, absolutely. Otherwise, I would not be here. But death is controlled by the power and the hands of God. So that is going to lead me into the study this morning. The incomparable God. And what I'm going to say I say it because God's word teaches it and because I experienced it. There's no doubt in my mind at all. None. Absolutely, positively, no doubt about everything that I'm going to discuss for a few moments this morning. What time is the class actually going to end?
10:35.
Good. The first thing about the incomparable God is there is no God but one. Just one. In full control of human history. And there is a prayer uttered by Moses in Psalm 90 that speaks about God and his unlimited qualities and characteristics. Listen to what Moses said. Lord, you have been our dwelling place in all generations before the mountains were brought forth. And those two words brought forth in Hebrew, what Moses is saying is before the mountains were born. Before the mountains were born, or ever you formed the earth and the world. From everlasting to everlasting, you are God. Now that's what Moses in his prayer says about the one God of heaven. That you have been our dwelling place in all generations. Even before the mountains were born, before the earth and the world was formed by God, from everlasting to everlasting, you are God, incomparable. There's only one about whom those words can be uttered and stated in undeniable detail. Think about the God we serve, who has chosen us to be his people. The God who has determined his will, his way, and we make that choice to walk in his way. But there's more when we talk about the incomparable God. For instance, in Isaiah chapter 45 and verses 11 and 12, this is what Isaiah said. Isaiah 45, 11 and 12. Thus says, our English version will say the Lord, but this is the personal name of God, YHWH, in the Hebrew language, Yahweh. Thus says Yahweh, the Holy One of Israel, and the one who formed him, that is, who formed Israel. Ask me of things to come. Will you command me concerning my children and the work of my hands? I made the earth and created man on it. It was my hands that stretched out the heavens, and I commanded all their host. I have stirred him up in righteousness, and I will make all his ways level. He shall build my city and set my exiles free. Not for the price of reward, says Yahweh of hosts, or of armies. And then in verse 18 he says, for thus says Yahweh, who created the heavens. He is God, who formed the earth and made it. He established it. He did not create it empty. He formed it to be inhabited. I am Yahweh, and there is no other. And what that plainly says is that God is incomparable. There's no one to match God. No one equals God. No one is above God. No one is over God. There is one God. He formed the heavens and the earth. But then he says in verse 9 of Isaiah 46, remember the former things of old, for I am God, and there is no other. I am God, and there is none like me. There is no other, and there is none like me. This means that God is incomparable. There's no one to match God, no one greater than God. He is the only God. In other words, Isaiah is clear that there is none like him. There is no other. He formed the heavens and the earth. There is no other, just one. And I know that, and I believe that. You know that. You believe that. We live our lives upon that. We look to the future based on that. We look back at the past and we don't stumble or fall because we know a greater hand extends from heaven to earth to hold us up, to give us strength, to enable us to endure. The incomparable God. So then, how do we know? What does the sacred text say about God that enables us to look into it, to think about it, and to reason from it to know that God is incomparable, that he has no equal? Number one, the fact that God is called the Creator. A couple of the texts that we read explicitly say he created and made the heavens and the earth. But the opening verse of the first book of God's word, as written by Moses, in Genesis 1:1 says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now let's look at what that is saying. In the beginning, that's when. God, that's who. Created, that's what. The heavens and the earth, that's the totality of all that exists. Isn't that amazing, my brother? That God made it all. Power, awesome power. From the human perspective, unexplained power, because we're mortal, we're humans, we live, we die. There are limitations to our thinking, and yet we read God's word, we learn that he is beyond everything that we can even visualize or picture in our minds. The word God in Genesis 1:1, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The word God actually is plural, Elohim, but it doesn't mean there are many gods. That's not what Moses is saying. No Hebrew of those days or any day would ever believe in multiple gods, as in many gods or idols. They wouldn't believe that. So when Moses wrote, in the beginning, God, and used the plural form of a word that God created, what is Moses saying? He's not talking about God personality, many. His point is that God is powerful, perfect, and unlimited, and has matchless qualities. This is called the honorific aspect of God or deity. Matchless qualities. So when he opens the first book of what we call the Bible in Genesis 1:1, it begins giving humanity an open eye and a true logical fact that the earth, the heavens, the trees, the mountains, the flowers, the waters, the fishes, the birds, the butterflies, that all things that we see were put here for a reason. In honor of God's unlimited qualities. Qualities that far surpass what we see through the mortal eye. I have seen flowers bloom. I have seen fish swim. I have seen birds fly. You have, we have, but we've not made a single one of them. No bird flies because we gave him wings. We did not make the air through which a bird flies. We didn't create the waters of ocean, seas, rivers, creeks in which fish swim. We know who did. God. Talk about unlimited quality. So, God is incomparable because he is the creator. Secondly, he's the great architect of all that he has done. Architect, the planner of what we see, what we experience, and what we can know. For instance, in Genesis chapter 1, going back to it, when Moses wrote, he not only has God creating the heavens and the earth, but there's something else that Moses gives us in what we read. There is like a pattern of language. For instance, verse 3, and God said, let there be light. And there was light. Look at the language. And God said, the planner, verse 6, and God said, let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters. And that word expanse carries the concept of a canopy. We have waters beneath the earth. We have waters above the earth. And we'll mention that in one of the lessons that I have in mind. But there, between it, there's a canopy, a firmament, the sky, the air. So God said, verse 9, and God said, let the waters under the heavens be gathered together in one place, and let the dry land appear. God is speaking according to what Moses wrote. Look at his plan. Light, God said. Firmament, now waters. Look at verse 11. And God said, let the earth sprout vegetation, plants yielding seed, and fruit trees bearing fruit, in which is their seed according to which kind on the earth. Verse 14. And God said, let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens to separate the day from the night. We can see it. God said, let these things occur. And it happened just like he said. And it is stated throughout the text that God said. And this shows us the power of God's word. God commanded these things to happen, and they did. That, friends and brothers, shows us the great architectural, perfect planning of God. Perfect. When I wake up and feel the warmth of the sun, or see the golden rays of the sun that sprinkle upon the earth, when I rise up at night and see the stars twinkle in the heavens above, I'm singing what God made, what he spoke into existence. The incomparable God, the planner of it all. There's more. Another quality or characteristic that expresses itself regarding God's incomparable, unmatchable qualities is the fact that he is the perfect and great shepherd. Psalm 23, listen to the words of David. Yahweh, that's that personal name of God again, and it occurs in Psalms about 671 times in that one book. Because God wanted to be known by his name, and this is the same name that he mentioned to Moses when he spoke to him out of that bush that was burning but not consumed in Exodus 3 and 14. Moses saw a bush that was burning, but not consumed it. Remember Moses' words, I must move in to see that great sight. So he does. And from that bush, Moses, take off your sandals, for the ground on which you are standing is holy ground. And then Yahweh told Moses to go back to Egypt. And you now tell Pharaoh, let my people go. And Moses said, when I go back, and they asked who sent me, what am I to tell them? And he said, I am who I am. You tell them, I am has sent me to you. What is God telling Moses there? I am a God of covenant, a God of his people. I will accomplish all plans that are necessary to bring my people from slavery to freedom and ultimately to the salvation through the Messiah, who will come from the tribe of Judah, that God would develop as they would be the sons of Israel. But David said, Yahweh is my shepherd. But this is a shepherd speaking about his own shepherd. David's role, he was king, he was a prophet, and he was a shepherd. In biblical days, shepherds did not walk behind the sheep, driving the sheep along the way. Shepherds walked in front of the sheep, and the sheep followed the shepherd, and the shepherd knew them by name. So in those days, the shepherd would walk, and the sheep would follow, because the shepherd knew the right direction, and he provided the right protection. So David goes on to say, Yahweh is my shepherd, I shall not want. That is, he's my shepherd, there's nothing I need. Isn't that something? He is my shepherd, and I do not need anything. He goes on. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. That is, he leads me beside waters of rest. Waters of peace. He restores my soul. David is saying this is what his shepherd, God, is doing. He's leading David. He's allowing David to lie down in green pastures, leading him beside restful waters. He's restoring David's soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. David goes on, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, and what this means is though I walk through a valley of deep darkness, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff comfort me. Shepherds had rods in those days, a staff to protect the sheep from bears and lions. David says, Yahweh, when I walk through the darkest valley of deep darkness, I will fear no evil, for you, my shepherd, you're with me. Your rod and your staff comfort me because I see strength from you and protection provided by you. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. In biblical days, the table was not merely a place to eat, it was a place to be consoled. Provisions were made, and David is saying that Yahweh would even prepare a table before the very enemies that David had. In other words, God prepares for his people in the good times and even in the bad times of sorrow and grief. He has never failed us at all when we walk with him, because he is the shepherd. You anoint my head with oil, my cup overflows. The blessings that come from God are more monumental and more numerous than we can count. We have a song, Count Your Many Blessings One by One. I can't do that, because the blessings that I have received from God are so unlimited. If I even count to the tips of my fingers, the tips of my toes, the length of my arms, and if I can even count for days or weeks, I can only count some of many that he has given to me and to you. I've never been worthy or deserving of one blessing that God has given. Not one. And they just keep on rolling and rolling and coming and coming. It's like the mighty oceans and the tidal waves that come into the sandy shores of land. And then they roll out, but then they return again. The blessings of God are like that. And I'm grateful to God for giving me another chance, another role to promote his name, to give high praise to his name in glory, and to be alive on this earth till this very day. That's right. I know who held my hand. I know who raised me up. The one God, the incomparable God. I was told, when they started giving me a little information bit by bit, that by the time the ambulance picked me up and took me to the hospital, that I flatlined three times. And I'm also told that when I got into the hospital, that the machine, whatever it's called, that normally shows a heartbeat, that it went like this. And the hospital staff in that trauma room that they called code blue, and I think it was two or three times, code blue. But guess what, brothers and sisters? I'm here. I didn't do it. I didn't overcome code blue or the flight line or the failure of the heart to beat. I know who did. The incomparable God. The greatest source of all, with merciful, tender, outstretched arms. May we never turn our backs on God. May we never look back without remembering every day, every hour, that we lived then and that we live now has come from God. The incomparable God is the God who gives us life. Paul said on Mars Hill in Acts 17, it is him in whom we live and have our very being. Our very existence is from God. Let's never forget it. Young people, listen to your godly parents when they tell you to pray, when they tell you to look up, when they tell you to be strong and to always remember God. Never forget God. When we do, we even forget ourselves, because we have something to hold on to. As the song says, hold to God's unchanging hand. We'll say more in the morning lesson. I see it's right now, 10:40. So it's time for me to shut up.